the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. This is 30 Laps of Dick. I'm Richard Lyon. Newsflash, we start with a newsflash this week. The Tay Road Bridge opens in Scotland. The road bridge carries the A92 road across the Firth of Tay from Newport-on-Tay in Fife to Dundee in Scotland. One of the longest road bridges in Europe. It replaced the old Tay Ferry when it opened in August 18. Some 400 miles further south, journey times from England to Wales were slashed when the Severn Bridge opened a few weeks later. Another news flash. The Beatles play their very last concert. Fresh from the release of their seventh studio album, the critically acclaimed Revolver, in July, the Beatles played their final full concert at Candlestick Park in San Francisco, California, on August 29. Crikey's another one. The Action Man toy figure is launched in Britain by Palitoy as a licensed copy of Hasbro's America. G.I. Joe Action Man was originally produced in Colville, Leicestershire, where it was made until 1984. The first Action Man figure, released this year, Action Soldier, Action Sailor, and Action Pilot. And I promise, the last one. The Jules Rimet trophy is stolen while on exhibition in London. The solid gold trophy, soon to be held aloft by Bobby Moore at Wembley, was stolen from a stamp exhibition at Westminster Central Hall in March, but later found wrapped in a newspaper in a London garden found by Pickles the dog. What's this all about? 30 laps, I hear you ask. Well, all these things happened in 1966. Another great occasion in that same year was the production of the quite beautiful Lamborghini Miura P400. Released at the Geneva Motor Show in 1966. So let's go drive it this week in 30 laps. Oh, and by the way, the Jules Rimet trophy that was won in 1966 by England was better known as the Football World Cup. Let's get cracking, shall we? Well, we covered the Miura some time ago in a vehicle profile. It's a special fan. We're a special fan of it here at 30 Laps, but we never got to drive it. Well, this is a real thrill. Climb in, reach back and grab that seatbelt, strap yourself in, and just sit for a minute. She's beautiful, inside and out. A real Italian beauty. But just to quickly recap, from Wikipedia, the Miura was originally conceived by Lamborghini's engineering team, which designed the car in its spare time against the wishes of company founder Ferruccio Lamborghini, who preferred powerful yet sedate grand touring cars over the race car-derived machines produced by their local rival, Ferrari. The Miura's long rolling chassis was presented at the 65 Turin Auto Show, and the prototype P400 debuted at the 1966 Geneva Motor Show. It received stellar receptions from showgoers and the motoring press alike, each impressed by Marcello Gandini's sleek styling and the car's revolutionary mid-engine design. Lamborghini's flagship, the Miura, received periodic updates and remained in production until 1973. A year later, the Extreme Countach entered the company's lineup, and amid tumultuous financial times for the company. And that was from Wikipedia. But the drive we do today is from Classic and Sports Car magazine. And it's called Driving the Real Italian Job, the Miura. Written by Alistair Clements, from Classic and Sports Cars online magazine. The Italian Job is a film all car enthusiasts have probably watched countless times. A classic crime caper. It's all about those red, white and blue minis, right? Wrong. As all us classic car fans know, there's also a certain Italian supercar that makes a memorable, if fleeting, appearance. Of course, we're talking about the Lamborghini Miura. Now, half a century after the car's release, Classic and Sports Cars' Alistair Clements goes on a very special journey with a car that starred in a movie on the roads that made it famous. A fascinating story, this is The Stuff of Dreams, with breathtaking photography that I don't have here, folks. I've only got the written word. But never mind, let's press on. This can't be happening. We've just covered the 305 metres of the Dardanelli Viaduct in a flash of orange rage and are already negotiating the first hairpin bins of the Col di Gran Sabbadino in a Rosso Miura Lamborghini. After all, that car met its end impaled on the front of a Caterpillar D7171A bulldozer, right? Wrong. Of course wrong. Because we all know the Lambo that met its ignominious fate just minutes into the 1969 crime caper The Italian Job was an engineless shell. Whew, what a relief. For decades, however, the true fate of the car, driven by heist planner Roger Beckman, was a source of speculation. No more. The Miura P400 we're in today has been certified by Lamborghini's Polo Stercorio as the film star car. And this is thought to be the first time it has returned to the great St. Bernard's Pass since the production of the film. And the same goes for the driver, Enzo Morizzi. He was Lamborghini's man on the scene and pilot of the Miura in all but the in-car images of Brazzi, the official driver, wearing those famous Renault Mustang sunglasses and lighting the obligatory cigarette, shot via a camera mounted on the door. The last time I drove this car was the 29th of June 1968, the septuagenarian smiles. I was 26 then, and I had left on Thursday. On Friday, we prepared the car with the cameras. We filmed all day Saturday. Then on Sunday morning, I drove it back to Santa Agata. Wearing a Lamborghini-branded red V-neck sweater beneath a long black leather coat. Morizzi is as dapper as he is animated, a ball of nervous energy, eyes twinkling and hands full of gestures in the Italian tradition. Ah yes, the hands. The way they manipulate the wheel is uncannily familiar, deliberate, respectful, caressing the leather rim and never crossing despite the acute corners we're tackling. And then it dawns, they're the hands we see in the close-up driving shots in the film. The cameraman was in the passenger seat and shouting at me to sit as far back as possible, Morizzi explains. When the movie came out in 1969, I was engaged and I took my fiancée to see the film. She didn't know I was in it, but when she saw the opening sequence, she turned to me and explained, "Those are your hands." The Miura's role lasted barely 4 minutes. Much of that overlaid with the titles, before its abrupt end at the base of a gorge, commemorated by a wreath from Mafia boss Altolabiani. It was quite a cameo. Even now, I defy anyone to drive an Alpine Pass and not to picture themselves in that Miura, or to hum the first few bars of Matt Monro's haunting On Days Like These. The combination of that dreamy song written for the sequence by soundtrack maestro Quincy Jones and the fantasy imagery is what makes it the ultimate demise so shocking. With director Peter Collinson setting out the movie's stall as a cut above the heist flick norm. The story of the car itself is almost as familiar as that of the film, but it's worth reiterating just to reinforce what an incredible achievement this Lamborghini was. Inspired by Ferruccio, the wonderful tractor magnate who decided to go all out and build better than Ferrari. Engineered by Giannopolo Dallala and engineered by Giotto Bizzarrini. But it was a hookup with Bertone and particularly the young stylist Marcio Gandini that led to its breathtaking shape and sired a dynasty, or dynasty, I should say, a dynasty of dramatic supercars. Shown as a chassis at Turin in 1965, a year later it was at Geneva wearing its jaw-dropping new clothes. And by early 1967, cars were rolling out of the factory in Bolognese. Such was the reaction to this 170 mile per hour, or claimed 163 is probably more realistic, road-going rocket ship. The projected 20 cars per year turned into 108 in the first 12 months. Yet to spot one on the road remained a rare treat for most enthusiasts. The same is true today, even if its fleeting but fundamental performance on the silver screen has helped to build the legend. The majority of Fiat Pandas we pass as we follow the road up to Saint-Rémy, where the bulk of the shooting took place, are locals, many of whom have never heard of the film. But one keen driver in a British registered Jaguar XJ40 makes a comedy double take as the Mura roars past. Although he'd worked for Lamborghini for nearly 40 years, from July 66 to July 2004, it's been a while since Maurizi drove any Mura, and he's initially cautious, cursing the cold gearbox and double declutching as he feels his way back into the car. But as the oil warms up, so Maurizi gets back into the groove, and the revs climb by the road. "It now sounds how I remember," he laughs, as the Mura begins to sing, then pops, spits, and fizzes on the overrun. Cinematic landscapes appear, such as the old hospice, now closed for the winter, further adding to what is surely the best view in the automotive world, the tumbling peaks of the bonnet forming a curvaceous rendering of the mountains above. The scenery has changed little, though through the road now has a more safety barriers, and we're shooting several months later, so there's no snow on the ground. However, in a few weeks' time, this pass will be impossible. In between coaxing the meaty gear lever through the six-fingered gate, refinished in gold during the restoration to match the original build sheet, Maurizi recalls how he made the shift from managing VIP clients to appearing in the film. Before we go on, we could almost say that Maurizi had a ticket to ride. Well, somebody had a ticket to ride. Anyhow, let's head back to this article. Paramount Pictures producer came to Saint-Agata in around March or April of 1968. He said he was looking for a car to crash. So Gazzi went to the service department and found a crashed Mura in Rosso, which is red, of course. The Rosso Mura already without its chassis plates, Maurizio continues. They took out the engine, and the original owner bought a new Mura with the same engine and chassis number to avoid paying import duties, as you do. When filming time came in June 68, we needed a car to match, Maurizio recalls. This one happened to be on the production line and in the correct colour. Although it is officially called Rosso, it's really orange, Mr. Lamborghini wanted a red colour but had to be different from Ferrari red. We took the car from the line, the test driver did the procedural 100 kilometres, and then I put on prova, or test plates, prova, Italian test plates, and drove it from Bologna to Aosta in more than 400 kilometres. I was careful because the car was going to be delivered as new. We disconnected the odometer to avoid the extra mileage, which is why the speedometer needle doesn't move in the film. Looking at the behind-the-scenes images, it's remarkable the car wasn't damaged by the Heath Robinson collection of planks, ropes and chains used for the camera rigs. I also asked the factory to change the seats because the white ones would get dirty, recalls Maurizi. But you can see the white headrests in the film. This tiny point would later prove crucial in confirming the car's identity. Like most early Murras, the chassis 3586 was specified with black vinyl, but from car number 165, leather became available as an option. And the order was uprated to white leather, Biancopelle, the only one of the three Rosso Mura cars built in June 68 to be so specified. In its cinematic role, or with its cinematic roll over, chassis 3586 was delivered to a dealer, Zani, in Rome on July 2, 1968. Several Italian owners later, in 2013, it went to France when rumours surfaced about its famous past after the dealer, Eric Bouton, spotted the unusual colour combination. He and subsequent UK owners Keith Ashworth, and in particular Ian Turrell, collated an extensive file of evidence, which formed the basis of the more recent research since the car moved to Liechtenstein and current keeper Fritz Kaiser in late 2018. Quite apart from its historical significance, that white leather really lifts the otherwise unremittingly black cabin. Ahead of the wheel are the huge rev counter and speedometer, with the six ancillary dials and a central fascia that turns to address the driver. As the black mouth of the tunnel approaches, Maurizi scrabbles for the bank of switches in the roof, flicking on Miura's headlights. It's impossible not to flinch as we enter, eyes peeled for that rogue bulldozer from the construction site down the valley. Even though we both know that the fated tunnel in the film is a good 40 minutes drive away. As we burst out the other end, breathe again, and after a few more switchbacks, the road opens up at 8,000 feet, where a discreet barrier marks the Swiss border. Here we stop, just as Maurizi did in 1968. We couldn't enter Switzerland because of the Prüver plates, which were the test plates. You need to have real plates, folks, of complete registration if you want to cross the border. While the photographer is inspired by the misty backdrop, we once more take in the beauty of the Mura. Lifting the huge front and rear clams reveals a chassis extensively drilled for lightness. The father of the Mura was really Dalala, Maurizi reflects, full of respect for the gifted engineer. Certainly getting the car unnaturally low was quite an achievement, as was the packaging to keep it so compact, largely thanks to the V12 being mounted transversely over the gearbox, mini-style, with a shared sump. Later, S and SV variants with more power, a wider rear track, fatter tyres and bigger brakes are preferred by enthusiast drivers for the sheer purity of line of the original poor P400 is impossible to match. From its famous headlamp eyelashes to its lithe, prancing shape, it's the finest design to emerge from Gandini's prolific pen. Unsurprisingly, it instantly caught the eye of casting directors, and the Mura was soon on demand on set. For Morizzi, it made a fascinating sideline. With any Lamborghini you see in a film from the 60s and 70s, I am the man driving. I became friends with all the actors. I shared a hotel with Brazzi and Valoni, and they pushed me to be paid as an actor because I was in the movie so much, Morizzi tells us. I remember another film in which a man gave his mistress a mirror, but she was played by Mariangela Malato, and she couldn't drive it, so I had to wear a dress and a blonde wig and drive around Rome. After this, the factory sent me to lots of films with Muras and Espadas. That's another Lamborghini, folks. It was great fun. The Italian job was, and always will be, a mini-adventure. But for many, the opening sequence had the most impact, not least because so few people had even seen a Lamborghini 50 years ago. It's easy to see why the filmmakers chose a Mura rather than the silver Isso Grifo in Troy Kennedy Martin's original screenplay. This car must have looked more flying saucer than mere road car in the 1960s. 5 decades on, the Lamborghini Mura still has the capacity to stop you in your tracks. It really is a very special car. Oh, Ringo, he's got a song for every occasion. Well, I hope you enjoyed that story of the wonderful Mura. It's just the most magnificent looking motor vehicle. And I'd like to thank Alistair Clements and Classic and Sports Cars online magazine for his story entitled An Incredible Journey. Let's stick with film cars and let's stick with Lamborghini, shall we? And we go to the Lamborghini Countach. And the movie was The Cannonball Run in 1981. The Great Car Chases. The opening sequence of The Cannonball Run and its sequel might as well have been billed as a 4-minute advertisement for the Lamborghini Countach. If anyone who watched these movies didn't want one of those Italian supercars before, they sure did afterwards. And has enjoyed playing cat and mouse with the police. Driven with gusto by Jill Rivers and Marcy Thatcher, the black Countach used in the first Cannonball film is notable for its front spoiler, which was just as useless as the rear one when it came to auto dynamic assistance. Unfortunately, after the opening scene, the Countach only has a fleeting appearances in the film. Was first launched in 1974, the Countach production continued until 1990. V12 power came from engines ranging from 3.9 litres to 5.2 litres. A total of 1,983 Countach were produced in total. You can't have a Lamborghini without a Ferrari. How about the Ferrari F355 Spider? The movie was The Rock in 1996. A Ferrari 355 was used in the James Bond film GoldenEye, as shown in the introductory that we didn't read to start with, but that's okay. But the yellow Spider in the 1966 film The Rock has much more opportunity to show off its abilities. In the film, it's driven by Nicolas Cage, but as he sets off, the gear lever is put into third. This is because Cage, a noted car fan, wasn't used for this bit of filming and another actor stood in. The 355 Spider was supplied by Ferrari North America for the film and they had a lot of work to do when it was returned. Although replicas as well, based on Pontiac Ferreros were used for the crash scenes in the film, it is rumoured that Cage's co-star Sean Connery enjoyed driving the Ferrari too enthusiastically. A whole 11,273 F355s were built between 1994 and 1999, and it is an increasingly well-regarded mid-engined Ferrari vintage. And we'll finish with a German car, the Audi S8 from that wonderful opening scene in Ronin in 1998. Ronin stands out as one of the best car chases ever made, yet its central plot was about a briefcase containing a mystery package. Director John Frankenheimer chose an Audi S8 personally for the scenes filmed at night in Paris, and the S8 also made an appearance later in scenes shot around Nice in the south of France, of course. Ex-Formula One and stunt driver Jean-Pierre Jarier was brought in to choreograph the chase through Paris across wet cobbles. He also schooled the film's actors, including Robert De Niro, John Reno, Jean Reno, Natasha Mulhoney, how to drive at high speed for greater reality on screen. The S8 nameplate continues to this day, with the fourth generation model only launched in 2019. It's a great opening scene. It is one of the best car chases I've ever seen on in the movies. It's something special. And we'll leave that. That was from Auto Car Magazine, and it was compiled by Al Sutty on the 23rd of November last year. We'll have a couple more for you next week, I think. So driving that Miura has left me quite breathless through that wonderful countryside. I might have to go and see the opening sequence of the original Italian Job once again. I guess that puts us at the end of our show for this week. I hope you've enjoyed driving the Miura. I certainly enjoyed bringing it to you. We've done a show on the Miura some time ago, but as I said up front, we hadn't driven it. And it's nice that it was driven by the man who drove it in the movie. Thanks for your company. Next week we'll talk about something else. We'll have some different music and some different characters. I hope you can join me and we'll go through that together. Until then, this is Richard Lyon, 30 Laps with Dick. Bye for now.